Welcome back to Saturday Miss. We have Kirk with us. Kirk, what do you think about all those names that words you shouldn't say?
Hello?
Oh, yes. Well, hi, Kirk.
Okay, well, I'm
what do you
here. And Well, it's kind of ridiculous. There's a time when you shouldn't say things. It's just polite, polite company and things. But then you don't want to say a lot of things around children and things of that nature. But I didn't hear the tail end of it. But I can say that a lot of it is to change it into a political correctness thing is bizarre. You have
of course
to report. But you need to warn people ahead of time that this is what's on the tape, and put the children aside and explain to them later what's going on if you need to, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, like for example, the last word on the list is a colloquial for breasts or bosoms, and I've always wondered what is the Christian antagonism towards a public display of breasts and bosoms. I mean, do they think that their eyes are going to fall out if they see a woman's bosom? That this is something that is somehow forbidden and taboo? I just don't get it.
Yeah, well,
it's this puritanical view of sex that is promoted by... It's like to say, my God is so mean-spirited that he created us to such that we would be attracted to one another, and then he made it improper for us to be attracted to one another.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah, well, I think there's David, fell in love with Bathsheba.
Yeah.
Solomon is the other one.
Solomon with Bathsheba. Uh-huh.
But he fell in love with that woman because she's out there taking a bath, so obviously she knew the power of it. So, I'm an artist, so we paint nudes because you have to learn how to do the body, and clothes will fit on and all. So it's not a big hang up to me, but it obviously is to our culture, and I think that's Victorianism.
I do too. I think it is it's a legacy of people being uptight, and of religion and of control policies that try to legislate morality through governments.
But I imagine one of the words was the S word, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know where that came from?
No.
Scott will not have to push the button on this, but I'll
okay. Because this is the S word followed by hit. Right? Is that the one you're talking about? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because I can say hit and I can say S. I just can't put them together.
I know. You can say spit if you have to. Bull spit would be okay.
Okay, bull spit. Okay.
So, but believe it or not, the British Navy found that the fuel that they were carrying on the ships was very heavy. And it decided to go to manure, because manure would burn very well and it's very light. So they baled it up like they bale up cotton, and they stuck it below deck. The trouble with it, when you have a spark below deck and you have all those fumes from methane, it catches the boat on fire. So what they said to them, they said they would take the bales, and they marked it on the bales on where they should store the stuff. And they stored it. They said on the bales, it says ship high in transit.
Okay.
And the British Navy said that they just used the SHIT
ship high in transit. Okay, boy, so I've learned a lot here. But so both SHIT is an acronym, as is for unlawful carnal knowledge. I don't know if I can spell the other word. Yes, Glenn.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, we have to. I think we have to be a little careful these. I see that Snopes and some other sites refute these acronyms. Although we hear them in school, we hear them in conference, I'm taught in high schools, I've heard it, in college. But apparently there are sources that refute these acronyms.
Oh, okay, so we may be misleading people as opposed to enlightening people.
Oh, well,
yes,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Well, I was corrected. It was store high in transit. And so
yeah, I do. The reason that I went ahead with the article and brought this to our attention really was ties into what we're going to do here in the second hour. I think we do ourselves a disservice when we preclude the use of words. And I know we do ourselves a disservice when, for the sake of political correctness, we report errantly. But words are very powerful communication tools, and God has no problem with the ship high in transit, because he uses the term. He calls it feces. And feces is a more descriptive term of the what comes out of the south end of a cow headed north. And he uses it because, A, it's associated with bulls and cows, which were the primary animal symbols for false gods. And it's the degrading aspect. It's the unpleasant smell just the overall classification of it that he uses in association with the bull and the cow, the false gods, to say that this is how I view those of you who approach me through religion. Mm-hmm. It's a marvelous metaphor, and he uses the term very effectively. So why should we preclude people understanding that? You know, he calls, there's a place where, I don't even know if it still exists, but there was a place before Yahweh through Yahusha enabled the promises of that enabled the first five benefits of the covenant through Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah. There was a place called Abraham's Bosom. God had no problem speaking of bosom.
No.
Why is a colloquial term for, because bosom, you know, if you were to tell your wife tonight, you know, I think you have really cute bosoms, she's going to say, oh, come on, what's wrong with you? You know, it's, why do we preclude the use of words, particularly a word that's associated with the very nurturing of a child, that is another one of Yahweh's favorite metaphors, you know, how we as a child are nurtured on our by our mothers. And he uses that as a metaphor and an association with the set apart spirit. Yeah, and God doesn't have a fixation on sex. I mean, negative view from, at least from what I've read on sexuality has to do with Paul's writings. That God had very little to say on the subject. It's his only admonitions were against doing things that were seriously depraved. And fornication wasn't among them. Things like bestiality, incest, pedophilia. You know, those are all no-nos. And he said, you know, don't do those things. But the rest of it, I just think we want to cast the religious God as a cosmic killjoy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to take issue real quickly on one other thing, and this is
okay.
My personal take on it. When I walked away from Christianity, I mean, I've grown to dislike it more and more and more and more, to the point of just it's horrible.
Now, mm-hmm.
To defend, and I'm not taking issue so much with Glenn, it's just because I think most people have the same thing, a view of it. But to me, when you talk about Muslims, I agree with you, it's a criminal enterprise. And
mm-hmm.
I classify that less than a religion and more as a mm-hmm. mafia-like, Ku Klux Klan-like organization
mm-hmm.
where they just out for power and money and sex, and it's BS, you know. Christianity,
right,
to me, is far more insidious, because
yeah.
it purports to be a
mm-hmm.
a way to get to God. I know that others claim so, but I mean, this is and you have a pope perhaps that stands up and he says, you know, I'm going to help you get there, where at the same time they are totally they're in behind the scenes destroying people's lives, molesting children and so forth and so
mm-hmm.
on. I mean, to me, that's so evil. And then when you talk about Christianity, you say things like, well, but they believe, and then you'll quote some things that Yahusha said, but you and I, and most of everybody that listens to this, we all know that they don't agree with what Yahusha said. They
mm-hmm.
don't quote Yahusha
right.
said, unless they're trying to
right.
defend it. And then they're, because they're following the admonitions of of Paul, who said, you know, fall in love with Rome and do what Rome says, obey Rome. And so it's okay to go out and kill people no matter what Yosha said. They only pull that card out when they're trying to say, but we are like this, and you are not like that. You're killing people left, right, and center. You're also arming other people, other religions to kill people. You're giving mafia-type people money and power. We just sent four F-16s to Iraq.
Yeah, I know. You know, what is Iraq going?
If Iraq is Iran, but we don't.
Iraq is Iran, so we just sent four F-16s to Iran.
Yeah, who's kidding who? I mean, how evil can you be? And you got a president who's all things to everybody. When he's with the Muslims, he's a Muslim, and when he's with the Christians, he's a Christian. He's very much like Paul. But he stands up and says, "I am a Christian." And then every Tuesday they sign off on how many people they need to kill because the CIA and or the military says these guys are bad guys, let's go send a drone and kill them.
Yeah. One of the items I was going to cover on the news today is that we sent a drone over Yemen and killed another half a dozen people that we said are associated with the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula. Yeah. And it's the very definition of insane. It was our killing of these very limited number of people who had no affiliation with Al-Qaeda. They just used the name because it came up on Google searches, so all of a sudden their fundamentalist Islamic views were more prevalent than others because Al-Qaeda was a popular search term. And they by killing them off, what they did is that the only constraint that was effective at keeping the Shia in Yemen at bay was these fundamentalist Sunni Muslims. So America systematically killed them. And then the Houthis, which are the Shia, had no throttling mechanism, and they began to be jihadists and plunged the country into civil war. And so we now know that what we did led directly to the Yemen civil war. And so what do? Well, we found a few more of them. Let's kill some more. We could really use another Saudi Arabian military purchase. And we know the Saudis are using American equipment to bomb Yemen. Yeah, let's kill a few more. We'll make a big war out of this. Nothing says profit like a big war. So, Kirk, what you were bringing out is the hypocrisy of it all. You know, Glenn had a point that with their lip service, Christians speak of sanctity of life, which is the antithesis of Islam, where there is the sanctity in death. But the reality is that Christians have been probably the second most responsible for mass killings and have done so many things that was hostile to life. Of course, what does Yahweh call the founder of the Christian religion?
The plague of death, of course.
Plague of death. So, yeah, it's superficial and it's lip service, and beneath the veil is nothing but carnage and death.
Remember, you have the British Empire, the biggest empire ever in the world by space, and it was predicated on this Christian. They thought of themselves as Christians as they ravaged the world. You have the Spanish Empire, which was Catholic, and they and the Portuguese wiped out most of South America and just did whatever they wanted with these people.
Of
Italy, Ethiopia wiped out Ethiopia, or they had the church there then. I mean, come on, at what point?
Yeah.
Germany was in a Christian nation. It was the most educated nation in Europe at the time, and they produced Nazism. I mean,
you look at the Inquisitions. You look at the Christian, the Spanish Christian invasion of Central and South America.
Yeah.
You look at the Protestant Christian invasion of North America, and all you see is death and carnage.
Yeah, you kill the body,
savagery.
You kill the soul on top of it. You know, they don't even give you
right.
All while at the same time telling you you got hope. I mean, this is awful.
Yeah, it's death's plural. You know, the other day we were looking up and considering Yahweh's use of uncircumcision. And, Paul says that he is the messenger of uncircumcision. And, you know, Yahweh defines uncircumcision as separation from him, total estrangement, which means you can't have a relationship with him.
That's right.
That it is, precludes anyone from entering or approaching his presence. It keeps everyone from being successful as it relates to benefiting from the covenant. It is failed. It is inadequate. It is deadly. It is corrupt. I mean, every negative thing that Yahweh can mention. I think we have Glenn back. Glenn, I think we did our best here to correctly. Say that you were accurate in your assessment.
I wasn't picking on Glenn either. I was just
not at all. You characterized it well. I just wanted to drive the nail home on this. The Christians are phenomenally duplicitous about this. When they want to appear nice, they hide in their churches or do charities or they maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually almost a domestic versus foreign thing on this military stuff. But when they want to kill, they do it under the auspices of patriotism.
Yeah,
correct.
So, you know, we're allowed to kill because it's okay to kill
obey
right.
country. So they kill in the name of country, then they go into churches and speak about benevolence.
Oh, yeah, they're waving the flag as the troops go by that they have empowered to kill, authorized to kill, and now they're celebrating the kill as they return. And they'll come out of their churches to go and honor that.
Exactly.
Right. You know, so right above the gun right above the gun on the badge, the arm patch of the police somewhere in Cincinnati was for God and country.
Right.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they for God. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, for Christians, you know, Christians hoist the cross in the name of deliverance. They hoist the flag in the name of violence. It's that simple.
Yeah. You know, the thing that was so striking to me yesterday was this realization of just how overtly condemning Yahweh is of the mindset of uncircumcision. You know, where Goliath was this uncircumcised. Yeah, you know, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that opposes the living God? And that's exactly what Yahweh would say of Paul. You know, they claimed to be a Roman, the very nation that renamed the province of Yehudah, Philistia. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he would oppose the living God? And then you go on from there, and that everything Yahweh said, he used uncircumcision. Uncircumcised words as they came out of the mouth of Moshe to uncircumcised individuals, to an uncircumcised dogma, to an uncircumcised mindset to describe death and depravity and all manner of things that were in direct opposition to him. And yet Paul, who spoke Hebrew, claimed that he was the messenger of uncircumcision. Now, I'm going to classify the last 2 days' discussions over this realization, and it just came to me this week, that Paul literally called himself the messenger of uncircumcision. That he wasn't trying to divide the world. He would do that elsewhere. I mean, we can't exonerate him there. He did, in fact, claim that the entire world had been given to him by God, with the exception of the dastardly Jews, which he hated so much. But in this case, he wasn't defining the people that would be part of his audience. He was defining his message. And he picked a term that may be the most ubiquitously, disgustingly presented term in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Everything that God hates is described as uncircumcision. I mean, that's a powerful indictment of Paul. How do you get around that?
You can't. Uncircumcision means you can't even go through the front door. I mean, you can't even get a start. You can't have a start.
No, you can't get through the front door. You aren't invited to the party that even reveals the front door.
You are nothing. You are separated yourself of your own volition, have separated
right.
totally from God, and said, I don't want any part of what you have to say.
Right. I do not want to be part of the covenant. I do not want eternal life. I do not want entry into heaven.
I don't want to spend time with you.
I don't want to spend time with
total
you.
Rejection.
Right. Yeah.
Total rejection.
I don't want to respect you. I want to be opposed to you.
And if, guys, if I may, I'd like to.
Sure.
I spoke about the Christian duplicity, about the duplicity of church versus patriotism and the violence thing. There's another mm-hmm. form of Christian duplicity that is especially pernicious. Not only do they, like, on the one hand, make it seem easier by not requiring the requirement of circumcision. Okay, we've got replacement theology, baptism, and that sort of thing. But
mm-hmm.
they are also forever, when they're evangelizing non-believers,
mm-hmm.
trying to get them into the fold, they make salvation mm-hmm. seem easy. Just pray this, and it's easy believism. Come on in your
yeah,
hand.
Easy peasy.
Once you're in, they're forever dangling the salvation carrot just beyond your nose, making it seem like you're not good enough, always calling your salvation into question. One minute
right.
you're in and it's easy. The next minute you're working out your salvation in fear and trembling before God, and you're not quite good enough. You're not really doing it right.
Right.
You have this about
right.
you. And you're
a little more money. A little more money, which could go a long way to solving this. A little more prayer would go a long way. A little more church attendance would go a long way. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you're always kept sweating it because you never really know that you're
right.
never really permitted to gain.
We're liberating you, but you better show up at church. We're liberating you, but you better give us your money. We're liberating you, but you better dress this way. We're liberating you, but you better not use these words. We're liberating you, better not engage in that stuff that's really fun. We're liberating you, but yeah. But here's our rules.
Relax and have a sense of security that you are in touch with your Heavenly Father, and then he's approachable, and you can trust him, and he's not going to cast you off. You're forever, one the next minute,
right.
it's Jonathan Edwards, and you're sinners in the hanging hands of an angry God again. And this
yeah.
is the continual. I listen to these super church preachers on TV. I have a colleague who's always watching them on TV. And especially there's this one woman who, and I swear, it's almost like these people, like they're a surrogate parent or something like this. There's one woman who's always the hard nose, tough talking, keeping it real, always perennially scolding attitude, or the perennial, cheerleader and rah-rah. And it's just one personality cult after another. And it's just really, it really, really is annoying, especially that constantly, you never know when you're never secure. You never know when what you thought you had is going to be taken away and you're going to be dangled over the lava again.
Right.
Well, the Catholic Church was where, if you got, and I know this because my wife tells me, informs me, I grew up Catholic, and if you, of course, obviously communion is a big deal to a Catholic, and if you get divorced, though, you can't.
The Eucharist.
Partake. Yeah, you can't partake. So they give on one hand, you're always saved, but no, you can't do this now and you can't do that now. So it's never.
Oh no! In Roman Catholicism, what you're doing is you're performing according to their rules, their church canon, which is their law. And I don't know how that liberates anybody. So that your days in purgatory will be lessened because you work it all out in purgatory. You're not really saved. You're working it out in purgatory. Oh, it's the every bit of it is hypocrisy.
And in a sense, Protestantism can be worse, or evangelicalism, because having wiped out the interim locales, like limbo or purgatory or stuff like that, it's an all or nothing position. So,
right, every soul goes to heaven or hell, which is not true.
Yeah. At least with purgatory, there's some hope, But with evangelicalism, one minute you think you're okay, and you always have that thing of, well, you thought you were okay, but you really weren't, And
By the way, where was purgatory first conceived?
Catholic Church.
Oh, I have no idea.
No, not the Roman. Oh, no, not the Roman Catholic Church.
It went back to Babylon like everything else.
Yeah, it does. It went back to Babylon. Where was infant baptism first practiced?
Well, I know that's Babylonian.
Babylon. So these replacement theologies for Christianity, baptism and also the veneration of Mary as a mother of God, purgatory, the Trinity. Every single one of their edicts, of their philosophies, of their doctrines, go back to Babylon. So they oppose circumcision, which is from Yahweh's Torah, and yet they accept the things of Babylon. Is it any wonder that God besmirches uncircumcision?
Right, right. It's really just amazing the manipulation. You know, this idea that you're constantly kept held at bay or possibly in fear. The these interim locales. You know, you mentioned that perhaps in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. You know, the Lazarus goes to Abraham's bosom or something like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some reference there to some interim locale, but in the Catholic Church, you've always they decided to legislate away limbo not too long ago.
Yeah, and whether or not there really is Abraham's bosom, we don't know. But let's just say that there is such a place. It was depicted really as a transitional place that would have had souls that had opted to participate in the covenant, kept in a very comfortable place prior to Yahweh's ultimate fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah. Because if God provided eternal access to his home and all of these benefits of the covenant without having himself enabled those promises, then he would be, even though he was knew he was going to, there's really just an honor thing here where, okay, you know, I know I'm going to work out so I can go ahead and have the ice cream, as opposed to I'm going to work out and I'm going to have the ice cream as a reward. But it's serious here. You know, I think that Abraham's bosom existed because there were those who passed away having accepted the covenant that Yahweh kept in a safe and wonderful place until such time as he fulfilled the promises that enabled the benefits of the covenant.
I think that's reasonable to think it that way, I believe.
Yeah. I understand you did some research on uncircumcision.
I did. I did. I went back to the roots and everything. The other day, of course, I had the basic stuff. We have the ones that are referred to in the JB sentence. Of course, there's uncircumcised, which is a raw. Or
right.
Which is what you covered. That was the eye, you know, and the Rosh and the
lamb. Right. People's perspective, right?
Yeah. So you have observes the no eyesight, and then the first, the top, the beginning, the best, and things. Which seems out of context, but you know, if you
But you know, if you're creating choice, and if circumcision is going to be the fulcrum, and it's the fulcrum upon which the largest religion differentiates itself from Yahweh's covenant. So this is a fulcrum issue. So you have a word here that is being used to define the ultimate devising and fulcrum issue separating the world's largest religion from Yahweh's covenant. And so wouldn't it be appropriate to describe that as this is the perspective, the viewpoint of man, of particularly of empowered men, men who claim to be enlightened and knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So the viewpoint of man, from man's perspective, you know, this is the aim, the eye, and the Rosh, the head. So from man's perspective, this is how he shepherds the sheeple. This is how he leads, and in this case, misleads, and leads them astray. Because, you know, a shepherd for human institutions is going to be counterproductive.
Yeah.
So it's the nature of Hebrew. Everything has a good and bad side, because there is a good and bad side.
But the interesting thing, when you go to their circumcised and circumcision, I looked up circumcised, which is a different word. It's nemul. And that, mul is the root, but nemul, you have a nun, m, mem, and a lamb.
Okay.
So you so now you have eternal continuance and inheritance, an heir and a sperm.
Right, yeah.
Picture
yeah, an heir, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then
so the sperm is a child born with an inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Which is counter to the uncircumcised, obviously. So, I mean, you've got
right.
much more a clearer.
Right. Followed by the mem, which is the symbol of the spirit. So, this child
life,
born of, yeah.
Cleansing.
Right, yeah.
Eternal life.
Right. So, this, right. So, in fact, even if you want to associate it, there is an association with water immersion, not with baptism, which is a religious thing. But there is a correlation between immersion and cleansing in the Torah. You know, you should be clean when you're going to celebrate the Yovel, for example. You ought to be, the symbolic cleaning by immersion in water is something that Yahweh wanted to convey. And here we have these children with an inheritance are cleansed and they are given life by the life-giving nature of water. But you have a symbol for the spirit, which means that these children are born into the spirit.
Well, that's the spirit
and,
leading versus the man's
right.
leading as well.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah, exactly. Followed by the lament. It only makes sense if mul, circumcision, is going to be the sign of forming a relationship with Yahweh, of being invited into his home, of being able to come into his presence, of being saved.
Right.
If mul is the sign of all of those things, and particularly the covenant that brings all these benefits, then the antithesis of that, which is Pauline doctrine, he is the messenger of uncircumcision, would be to be estranged from God, to be excluded from him, to die. That's just not good.
No, I made a little note here on circumcision. I said, okay, this is the mark of eternal life.
Yes.
So, therefore, uncircumcision would be the mark of eternal death or separation
right.
or just death. And
right. Let's talk about separation because death is one thing.
Yes.
You're right. One is the mark of death. That's why
right.
Yahweh called Paul and Christianity the plague of death. And the other is the mark of life because you have to be circumcised to participate in Pesach. The next is the separation aspect. I mean, circumcision is about being separated. Uncircumcision is about not being separated. And if you're not separated unto God, if you're not separated from these human institutions, you get none of the benefits.
Right.
So it's the separation aspect is essential. That's why God uses Kodesh set apart so often and why it is such a crime that Kodesh, set apart, is translated holy, or changed to holy in English Bibles, because people miss the concept of how important it is to be set apart. The Shabbat is set apart. Yahweh's name is set apart. The invitations to meet with him are set apart. Yisrael is set apart. Yehuda is set apart. The Spirit is set apart. Crying out loud, everything is important, including the covenant, is set apart.
So I mean, I kept it even simpler. I said, you know, it's the mark of the chosen people. So if you don't want to be one of the chosen people, don't go
right.
exercise. I mean,
right.
this is just about as straightforward as you can get. So it's not. It shouldn't be any confusion on it. It's this. You choose.
No. How could 3 billion people believe a religion where the founder of that religion bluntly says that he is the messenger of uncircumcision, when Yahweh, the God who authored the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the very God that this messenger of death claimed that he was representing and that had empowered him, associates uncircumcision with everything that has failed, deadly, disastrous, and estranged?
Serious is comical, but serious. I mean,
yeah,
it's life and death serious. I mean, just
right.
It's just
yeah, you got all these seminaries around the world,
right.
right? All these seminaries, all these Bible studies, and you're telling me that the millions of Bible studies and
never looked up this word,
thousands of seminaries, And never once in all of the sermons, all of the seminaries, all of the Bible studies, they never looked up uncircumcised? Never bothered?
Too short this portion of the program, but tomorrow, for a minute, if you don't mind, I'll go over the root and also some interesting things that come from that root, other words that come out of that root, in addition to circumcision. All of them are just, but I will give you the root meaning real quick.
Okay, please.
The root, of course, is just the mul, M-A-L, or the mem and the lamb. And I can reduce it from the letters. I can just say the M, of course, is the spirit or cleansing water and life. And the lamb, of course, a lamb is to teach, direct, and guide. And you could say mm-hmm. teach and direct, to be taught and directed and guided by the cleansing water of the spirit, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you want to extrapolate
sure.
that much in it. But the root word and meaning, if you look it up, it says, interestingly, speak word and continue. A continuation of segments that fill the whole, for instance, like a chain of words blended together to form a sentence. And of course, we live by his words. So mm-hmm. it's nothing. So once again, from that comes all living things after that. And then there's a bunch of little root words that, bunch of words from that root that I thought terribly, terribly interesting. I don't know how much time we have now, so but I'll give you one.
Yeah.
I'll give you one.
Okay.
Amal. Well, I guess we can save that for tomorrow.
Yeah, save that for tomorrow. That's
okay.
There is nothing more important to Yahweh than the covenant. It is only found in one place. That is the Torah. It has five terms and conditions and five benefits. And it has but one sign, and that sign is circumcision. So the more we learn about this topic, the better we'll understand God himself.